This is Steve Sherlock with another in a series of podcasts for Franklin Matters. In this session, we're going to talk about the school committee meeting on Tuesday, August 26th, where there are a few items of real interest. There are a number of items on the agenda, and respectfully, while all of them are important, these three, I think, are the most important. Unfortunately, though, the most significant item for all of the week occurred after the public portion of that meeting, but we'll get to that in due course. The Ben Franklin quote for this week: if you would not be forgotten as soon as you are dead and rotten, either write something worth reading or do things worth the writing. So, without further ado, let's get into the school committee meeting. The first topic will be the update from Pay to Ride. Miriam Goodman and Maureen Sadvolinsky, the assistant superintendent, brought an update on the Pay to Ride program. Miriam also had an analysis of the last 4 years, beginning with 2005 and going into this year. So a total of 5 years. I don't have an Excel copy of that, but I did get a PDF copy, or make a PDF copy from the hard copy I have. So that is available as an image, and you can view the numbers there to reference the conversation that Miriam and Maureen have in this portion of the school committee meeting.
I guess we'll start with the good news. Today, the first day of school, was probably the best day with respect to transportation that I can remember. We, in the superintendent's office, only received one phone call about crosswalks unpainted. So we were very happy to defer that to Mr. Nutting's office. In the transportation office, the bulk of the calls were on just routing and missed stops. When I checked in with the schools and after arrival, couple of late buses, but nothing out of the ordinary. Couple of situations where we're going to be looking at overcrowding. Keller bus 7, parents reported that students were coming across a dangerous street. That had already been rectified by the staff news run. So I think Lisa was responsive, getting the issues out there and working with homes to get resolution. So it was a very quiet day overall in the district.
I can tell you, I plan to give myself extra time figuring traffic. Not only was it smooth.
My bike went through the whole.
Not only was it smooth, but I made it the earlier train than I expected to go. I couldn't believe how quick I got in and out of two school parking lots.
That's what happens when you drop a child off at 5:30.
and I would just ask all of you, if you hear of issues, give us a call. If parents are calling you, let us know, and we'll try to get on the situation and resolve it. We'll be starting head counts on buses later in the week. The first couple of days, we don't look at the bus passes. By next week, we'll be looking closely at the bus passes and if we need to move some students, which we don't like doing, but sometimes we have to when we get overcrowding. We're ready to know. There's one situation, Amy Sullivan, it's bus 25, is very crowded, so we're going to be looking at that tomorrow. So we tried to put together some information. It's been really interesting. I think Lisa took 123 transactions in the last few days. It has been amazing. Number one, the new folks enrolling in the schools. There are times in the past few days we've had 40 waiting to enroll kids from the office of the superintendent and then going down to the transportation to put kids on the bus. So it has been very, very busy. And we put together some of the data and tried to address all of Mr. Cafasso's concerns. And I think we got everything, I hope. With the exception of, because we've had a surge in late enrollments, we are going to have to update the projected online for a couple of weeks till we get, Lisa hadn't gotten that data entered into the software to be able to pull it out easily with a stack of papers to enter be said that people are enrolled fast and furiously. So, you know, in sort of working from the bottom up, route changes, we worked closely with Holmes to look at some of the routes. Last year we kept a folder in data on parent requests, issues that parents raised during the year. We were able to rectify those. I think one of the most active issues was on Maple Street, using that as a turnaround. We rerouted several buses, so we don't have to do that. We had sent the police out a few times, and they deemed it was safe to turn around. But it was of concern for parents, so when we did our routing, that was a priority to alleviate the concerns of parents. We did have to add some stops due to increased enrollments on the Davis Thayer runs, and then Brandywine, which continues to be a neighborhood with increased growth in enrollment. Last year, we had to add a bus to accommodate the increase in student enrollment, so we'll be looking at those numbers, and we've added a few more stops in there for kids who moved in over the summer. So I don't know if you have questions. We looked at, Miriam did a nice job of going back and finding historical data. She did a great job in tracking down the bills from several software systems. She really didn't know how that they existed. We were lucky that the business office staff maintained a lot of paper files on hand, so we were able to put together some enrollment numbers and what we actually spent. And I think one of the most striking issues continues to be that what we budget for transportation is not what it costs. And even with the pay to ride, we still continually have a gap. So that's something we're going to continue to grapple with. You know, as you look at our student enrollment growth, we still have a number of students riding the buses, but we still always have that gap between the actual cost of transportation and what we actually have budgeted.
Well, I just want to add a couple of things. Number one, the late signups that Maureen referred to, not all of those folks necessarily are enrolled in pay to ride. Those folks just enrolled in the district and they needed to be either bused because they're bus eligible or because they choose to pay to ride. So that's one piece that's not available at this point because the date that stacks of paperwork. The second piece is the on the first line you see the revenue received from pay to ride, which is a net of expenses. There are some small expenses that run through that account that are specifically related to pay to ride, printing the application form and bus passes, refunds to parents who choose not to pay to ride during the course of the year or with the changes in the rates. So that amount is reflected as the actual revenue posted. So if I went into the computer system at this moment in time, that's the amount you'd see in that particular account. What I will call to your attention is it will never equal the line at the bottom of that section, which is a calculated revenue expected, because of the way that those dollars are accounted for on a modified accrual system of accounting. So the money actually comes in June, but it's allocated for July expenses. So that the dollar amount that you see in at the bottom, the calculated revenue, is based on the number of actual students enrolled in the program times the rate at that time. And that's just the calculated revenue for the year. Not necessarily what was actually brought in during that year, because, for example, in June of 08, we started receiving current 09 payments for pay to ride. They were booked starting from June 15th through June 30th, and a significant amount of money was booked to FY 08. That's recorded in that $407,000 that you see listed under FY 08. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention because I know that might be one of the issues that might come up. And I also wanted to just clarify that The annual expense listed is just the base cost of the transportation contract that we pay to Holmes to transport. So it doesn't include all of the other expenses for transporting special ed students or other van issues and that kind of thing. This is just the base cost of the contract.
It's also exclusive of transportation for athletics,
correct,
sporting events, which comes out of the athletic accounts. I think one of the other issues is what extraordinary expenses could we anticipate for transportation in instances of inclement weather when we've had severe snowstorms and the town takes a bit of time to get all of the sidewalks plowed. We have at times instituted emergency busing for those students who are walkers. That is an additional expense we have to pay for each one of those buses. When a school loses power, and those who live in the Kennedy District know that seems to happen with frequency, or there's a loss of heat, or we have to evacuate a facility for some sort of crisis, we need to pay for the transportation of those students. Though I do have to say Holmes has been very generous in times when we've needed buses in an emergency, and they provide them quickly and often without cost. But in anticipating extraordinary costs, those would be the two areas where we might accrue some additional expenses.
After providing that as an update, and based on the decline in the enrollment, Superintendent Wayne Ogden recommends keeping with the plan as covered with the failed override, that the late bus would be cut. It was not included in the budget unless the override had passed, so no additional action was required of the school committee on the recommendation. There was, however, additional discussion, primarily from Ed Cofaso, to find, quote, short money and keep the bus running. There was not additional support for this idea across the committee. The override failed, hence no late bus. There are additional expenses, additional costs. The projections that they did have early on, in late July, I think we had covered that at the time it looked like the enrollment was going to be increasing. In fact, the enrollment has declined. And with the decline, thereby additional revenues, there are additional expenses, so it's just not going to work out. Hence, no late bus.
Any other questions? I do have a $60,000 question. I know at our last meeting we were talking about looking into the prospect of funding a late bus with additional pay-to-ride revenues. And have you had an opportunity to look at those numbers and see if that is something that's going to be available?
So let me jump in and take that one and just say that for a variety of reasons, most of which were previously presented, one, I think for the last couple of meetings, I gave some optimistic projections based on sign-ups that an overabundance of sign-ups was going to help us perhaps fund the late bus. But those projections have not been sufficient to generate the money that we would need to add the late bus. The volatility of the fuel costs that seem to be roller-coastering up and down right now. We have some unanticipated tuition and transportation, significant transportation and tuition costs in the area of SPED. And there is a possibility because of the, when we were looking at the rerouting of our buses, not only did we find that we couldn't reroute and eliminate it without keeping kids on buses for extraordinary amounts of time, our late rush of late registrations over the last week has caused us to get pretty close to a limit that if we have another 5 days or 4 days of 80 more people enrolling their kids in school who need bus, you know, bus services, we'll be more likely faced with the possibility of having to add our 31st bus, not be able to reduce a bus. So for those four economic pinches, I would just recommend that we stay with the situation where we do not offer late bus services at this time. I don't know where we would find the funds in the budget to do that, given that picture I just painted for you. And, you know, I'm sorry to say it, because I really felt a month ago that we were going to be able to do that, and it just would be unwise financially, given everything else you've heard, to do it. Requires no action on your part to go that route, because it wasn't in the budget to begin with.
Well, I would oppose that decision. Just, you know, every parent I've talked to this summer since had initial indications that the late bus was going to stay, thanked the school committee and the administration profusely, all working parents, all holding down two jobs, partially to pay for our schools, and partially to fund their children's education and their households. And I'm talking about dozens and dozens of people who thanked us for saving the late bus, because they have no way to pick up their kids because they're working. So I would ask the committee to direct the administration to kind of delay that decision not to offer a late bus. Clubs don't start until next month. The schools typically do have some savings, as we saw in July and August, that they're able to transfer to other accounts. And I would strongly suggest to the committee that allowing the administration to get rid of the late bus at this point would be a big blow to the working families who are constituents, and would be premature.
Any other thoughts on that? Coral?
Actually, I understand where Ed is coming from. However, given the financial constraints of the school district, I can't see in good conscience going forward with keeping the late bus. First of all, clubs generally start next week or the week after. So it's not in, when you say next month, I'm hoping you mean September, because they don't start in October. So we couldn't start it, couldn't bring the late bus, I don't think, after clubs would start. I think it would do parents a disservice. Given the fact that the majority of individuals or students who use the late bus are middle school, I don't think it's that large a number to keep it going. And at this point, given the number of layoffs that we faced as a district and what we're going through personally, I just can't see doing it. And I'm one of those parents who utilize the late bus, and I just couldn't see it.
Can we just impose a fee rather than, I think it was $1? Why don't we impose a fee to keep the bus and to fund it, and have the administration come back with a recommendation on what kind of fee users should pay?
Kind of looked at that, and the fee would be about in excess of $300. I mean, one thing we could look at, what would the cost be to just give the middle school? The high school, as we shared data over the summer, the high school bus was the one that was undersubscribed.
Is the high school going to get additional services from GATRA? Is that the plan?
That's GATRA's plan.
Okay.
Starting.
It's
what's
not
that?
All of them, wasn't it? Just
the high school.
Routes, though.
The high school. Yeah. Was it, and they would take Horace Mann students who walked over to the high school from Horace Mann, but they were going to just come in, do the loop around the front of the high school, and pull out. And that's a 50 cent per ride for students. But that's the, I think the map that I shared with you last time showed a slight expansion in the routes, but not a significant enough one to resolve this problem.
Yeah, the consequence of this decision is that you're forcing kids not to participate in the extracurricular activities that we've worked our faces off to save. I mean, this is a really, really short-sighted decision, given all the money that we move around in this budget near the end of every year, every fiscal year, to fill gaps elsewhere. I'm having a hard time understanding why suddenly, you know, the low 10,000s that the late bus might cost is a budget buster. It doesn't make any sense, and you're sending the wrong message to the families that support this district with their hard work and with their generosity every day, and who send their kids to our schools and encourage them to participate in our extracurriculars because they believe in the system. These are PCC parents. These are parents that you and I see every day shopping for groceries. You're making the wrong decision here if you shut this bus down.
Anybody else? Just, I know that we had a lengthy discussion on this issue at the budget subcommittee meeting and asked over and over to identify any potential revenue sources for the, that could fund this. And rather than get revenue sources to fund this, we learned about some additional expenses, and I think it was we had some special education expenses that just came to us in the last several weeks, and you just look at the picture, and when you talk about moving money from line items at the end of the year, I know that we're going to have to move money to cover that extraordinary expense, which I understand was in excess of $100,000.
Just for the transportation.
And that doesn't include the education component. So it was, you know, hearing this and also understanding that when we went to the public in the spring and said, look, one of the things that is on the block that we're going to have to eliminate is the late bus. So I don't think anybody is going into this blindly. They understood one of the consequences of a failed override would be the elimination of that bus. I would love to see something like that stay, and I agree with you wholeheartedly that it's a horrible message, but you know, it is the fiscal reality that we're in. We have to deal with it.
I agree with you, Jeff, that we need to live within our means, but you're not talking about a $500,000 program. You're talking about a small ticket item that is 1/10,000th of our budget. And I understand as well as anyone on the committee the message of the override and the need for austerity. But we need to remember that it wasn't only parents that voted in the override. And I guarantee you that if you took a poll of the working families now working two full-time or one full-time and a part-time or sometimes more to make ends meet in this economy, they would thank you for saving the late bus because it's the only way they're able to work on the larger issue of sustaining their family and still give their kids access to a quality education. Basically, telling the kids take the bus home after school, forget about clubs. It's not that we can't fund the clubs. It's not to demand the clubs. It's that we don't want to scrounge up, find somewhere to cut for just a few tens of thousands of dollars to support a larger district-wide curriculum of extracurricular activities.
I hear that. You know, I just do not want to be in the cutting business. Have lived through the cuts that we just made. You know, I say enough is enough on cuts. That was one cut that we had identified. If we don't make that cut, we're going to need to identify another area to cut. And I think, you know, it would be incumbent upon us as the school committee to identify what we would cut in order to fund the late bus. And I quite frankly can't find another area in this budget that I would be willing to cut for something like that. You know, I appreciate the need for the late bus, but it's just not something that I think that we can afford at this point. And, you know, I still think of an excess of 40 teachers who are no longer on the payroll. I think of some of the statistics I heard coming home today about the class sizes, how many classes are over 30, you know. I would rather put the money there if we had it. Just my thought. So?
Well, I mean, I agree with Jeff. I mean, and, you know, we don't want to cut the late bus, and we thought the enrollment would be such that we could possibly afford it. I mean, if you look at, you know, the ridership or the pay-to-ride levels, I mean, if you look from last year to this year, you know, we're projecting a loss of about 525 students, and from FY07, about 240. So, you know, there has been sensitivity to this, you know, $100 increase. And we have looked at various places to capture that money. And we're concerned that, you know, we want to be fiscally responsible, too. Nobody wants to cut the late bus, but unfortunately it's a fiscal reality right now. And there are going to be difficult decisions. There was a difficult decision last meeting with the brick school. This is another difficult decision.
The next item from the school committee meeting is the Franklin High School scheduling problem. The high school office, as they were working on the schedules for the students for this year, implemented the teacher cuts and the classes associated with those teachers that were cut because of the override failure. And then when they ran through the schedule came up with a hole where approximately 200 students had an empty period. Now, as this segment references, I believe the state rule passed in, I think it was 1996, they referenced, forbids study halls. So the high school administration played with a few options. They were able to accommodate approximately 30 to 40 students by extending or removing some of the limitations on class size. And that accommodated some students. One additional teacher resigned in early August. That teacher was in an English role, backfilling that position with another English teacher would not provide the coverage for the schedule. However, they did do the analysis, and backfilling that teacher with a music position would cover the hole. So they did go ahead and hire a music teacher. And some of that analysis from that meeting is explained in the following segment.
All right, so let's move on to the update on the scheduling problem at Franklin High School.
About 3 weeks before the summer ended, I believe I sent you an email updating you on a problem that was developing at the high school. And to try to simplify it, basically, 3 weeks ago, after running the schedule with a variety of permutations, we had about 200 high school students who still had what I would call a hole in their schedule. They had one period still unscheduled. We no longer are allowed by the state to have study halls, so that's not an option. We also, around that same time, had an English teacher position available because someone had left our district and resigned. So Pam Gould, Peter Light, who handles a large share of the scheduling with Pam, and I met to try to resolve that scheduling problem and get those 200 kids scheduled up. There were several options discussed. One of the things that we did is we uncapped our science classes that were capped at 24, which are guidelines for science and science safety. And we allowed the science classes to rise up to 26 kids per class. And our labs only can accommodate 24 kids. But we did that. That took a little bit of the pressure off. And then we had a discussion between what type of teaching position would best address the remaining 160 or 170 scheduling problems that we had. We ran options of hiring that English teacher who had resigned, hiring a business teacher, or hiring a music teacher. And you may remember that in the original high school cuts of 17 people, we did cut a choral music, a predominantly choral music position. Anyway, we ran the three scenarios, and if we hired an English teacher and scheduled, that wasn't going to solve the problem almost at all. But what it would do would keep English classes in the 22 to 24, 25 range. If we hired a business teacher, larger class sizes, more popular classes, that would have gone 50 to 60% of the way to solving the problem. And it was the music teacher, because of the large choral classes by their nature are large classes, that scenario solved all of our schedule problems in combination with raising the cap in science. Consequently, I gave Pam and Peter permission to, instead of rehiring an English person, to hire instead a music person, so that we could solve that problem and not have to start the year with some number of large number of high school kids missing a class in their schedule. And the reason I'm bringing it to your attention is not that it requires any action on your part, but someone who pays attention to what we say and what we do might say, I thought I remember in the budget discussions that without an override, we were going to cut the choral music program back one teacher, and in fact, we did that. But that was the only way that we could conceive of within our budget to solve the schedule problem. So I'd be happy to answer any questions. And Pam is still here, so she could. She was involved with the day-to-day stuff. Matt?
I have several people say to me, well, why don't we just stick them in the study halls? And I was hoping that you could explain to the audience why we can't stick them in the study
halls. That's a simple one, and they're not any longer. They haven't since 1996, and the state's Time and Learning Commission, that study halls were banned by the Department of Education. So we're not allowed to have supervised study count for a kid's schedule.
So that wasn't banned by us, it was banned by the...
No, that was the Department of Education based on the recommendation of this state time learning, actually, which was chaired by our new Secretary of Education.
Excellent, thank you.
Any other questions, follow-up?
So what did this do to the English class sizes?
Pam, I don't know if you have the most recent numbers, but at the time we were running it, it looked like it was going to push it up from what it was to 24 to 27, 28.
Yeah, it's in that range. I don't have the actual numbers because the guidance is still playing with the class sizes as we speak. But it did bump it up a few kids. Well, the reason we couldn't, to just jump off on what Wayne said, that we felt we couldn't do this because we didn't have enough electives to... The issue was the electives. People don't elect to take an extra English. You take your 4 years and that's about
it. Some of them do.
Well, yeah, sure, but we
public
don't have
speaking,
enough.
But you got rid of public speaking.
But we couldn't offer five more sections
right.
of that. That was the issue for it. Not that... You know,
right.
they're not going to elect to take an English 5,
right.
you know, and that was the reason.
I don't think to any of us on the committee that it was a surprise that this was going to happen.
No.
We had a lot of constraints up at the high school with, the freshman academy wanted to keep that intact, and we knew that the course was one of the classes that you could have a lot of kids in. And I think this tough decision sort of speaks to, you know, Ed's concern about the late bus. You know what? I love music, but I'd rather have another English teacher. I'd rather have all of the teachers that we have to cut back out of the high school.
I agree.
I'm sure you would too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you probably wouldn't want to be talking to 150 parents whose kids were missing a class.
And my daughter was the one who had a hole in her schedule for the second semester, and it got filled with a music class. Yeah. So,
and we were lucky that a teacher had resigned.
Yeah, that's...
So, another financial reality was that there was an open position where we didn't have to go looking for more funds somewhere else.
I didn't mean to be flip when I said you eliminated, you know, public speaking. That's a fabulous class.
It was a great class.
Already. The kids can't take it. And it's certainly necessary in this day and age.
But I want to echo with Wayne, and I appreciate him bringing it before you, because I do think it is that public perception. We've all talked about that, and that was one of my biggest concerns, and I said that to Wayne. It's not that I didn't want to add in music, but my fear was that people would say, there you go, you didn't have it. But so I appreciate him saying that. It just was a transfer of a position.
Right.
We didn't add it back in just for the sake of it, so we wanted to be very clear on that.
The major news of the week occurred after the public portion of the school committee meeting ended. As you have no doubt heard by now, Superintendent Wade Ogden submitted his resignation effective June 30th, 2009. To those who call him a quitter, he is hardly that. A quitter would have provided 2 weeks or less notice and gone out the door. Wayne took the far more courageous option of providing significant notice to the school committee in order for them to start looking for a replacement while he continued in his role running the school department for this school year. Yes, it is a disappointment, but Franklin voters have no one to blame but themselves. The majority of those who came out to vote on the override defeated the increase to provide a level service budget to the school. So the same thing we would have providing to the students in 2008, we are not providing to those students who are coming back to school in 2009. The real issue lies with the many, many voters who did not come out to vote at all. As I mentioned previously, the quick numbers on the override show that approximately 500 voters changed their vote from the 2007 override to 2008 and voted no. An additional 1,000 voters who came out in 2007 to vote yes simply did not show up. We do have tough times ahead of us. We need to work together. We need to make our presence felt at each and every school committee meeting and town council meeting. Please don't just sit there. Get up and do something. If you need inspiration, view the Do You Believe video posted from YouTube on Franklin Matters on 8:30:08. If that does not move you, then Franklin really has a significant problem. That's why I would go back to the opening quote. If you would not be forgotten as soon as you are dead and rotten, either write something worth reading or do things worth the writing. And since Ben is for whom this town is the first one in his honor, I think there is something to listening to what he says and trying to find a way to get through our problems. So to close, this podcast has been a public service provided to my fellow Franklin citizens and voters. This is Steve Sherlock. For additional information, please visit franklinmattersblogspot.com. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly via email. There's a link on the webpage, or the email address is suresteve@gmail.com. That's sure, S-H-E-R-S-T-E-V-E, all together, @gmail.com. The music intro and closing is again from the PodSafe Music Network, John Schmidt, powerful, exhilarating piano music. I hope you enjoy.